Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Branislav Vejdic. He is the CEO and founder of Heartbeam. Branislav, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, as I do with all my guests, I think it's always important to get a little bit of perspective about you, your background. Tell us a little bit about your history, how you reached here, your PhD, and how Heartbeam came about.
Yes. I was born and raised in ex-Yugoslavia. I was always fascinated by chips, you know, being a generation that just saw initial wave of chips entering the markets, etc. I wanted to study that. I finished electrical engineering back in Yugoslavia and Serbia, and came to the United States to get my PhD in chip design. I did so back in 1984, and shortly after graduating from University of Minnesota, I was recruited by Intel Technology Development to work on next generation of technology. 2 years out of school, I was designer of the first flash memory for Intel. And so I hold two patents that were critical enabling flash as a product, and in that sense, I'm a co-inventor of flash. Next thing I know, they made me a manager, right? You know, what do you do with a good technical guy? You make him a manager. And I managed actually as a senior manager, Pentium 2 to Pentium 4, and spent over 20 years at Intel in various senior management positions in the technology development world of Intel. Fast forward 2007, I invested into as an angel investor, invested in a technology that was cardiovascular related, and became keenly interested in cardiovascular space. After all, heart is an electrical device. And so my background was kind of relevant for studying cardiovascular disease. And there is a personal story that I'd like to share that sheds a little bit of additional light on how a chip designer became a cardiovascular insider. Back in Europe, my father was a famous physician. And one afternoon, he developed this chest pain, indigestion type of feeling. And, you know, he reacted the way most people do, which is denial and procrastination. Unfortunately, that was a heart attack in progress, and we lost him a couple of hours later. And you know, that was an additional motivation for me to basically leave Intel and become a cardiovascular device insider. Fast forward 2015, I looked around and was looking for a technology that would help that chest pain patient, like my father was, at home, detect heart attack. And there was nothing. There was nothing user-friendly that could be with the patient 24/7. And I decided I'm gonna tackle that problem. That's how Heartbeam was started, to solve that very problem that killed my father. And when I studied a little bit further the problem, it was apparent to me there was a huge problem. And a patient that has a chest pain waits about 3 to 4 hours before they react to that chest pain on an average. During that 3 to 4 hours of indecision by the patient, the mortality rate goes up by 40%. And due to this delay, there are about 300,000 heart failure cases in the United States every year due to the muscle, cardiac muscle, that is lost. And cardiologists often say time is muscle when it comes to a heart attack. The more you wait, the more muscle you lose, the worse the prognosis is for the outcome. So all in all, not only that problem has a human toll in terms of lost lives, but it has a clear economic side to it, which is many people rush to the emergency room for no good reason, just indigestion, pull muscle, etc., to the tune of about 85% or so of these chest pain related visits to the emergency room are really not related to a heart, and such that those patients should not be in the emergency room. Huge cost, over $10 billion to the healthcare system. So overall, two sides of the story: lost lives, lost healthcare dollars, wasted healthcare dollars, and no user-friendly, patient-friendly technology to tackle that.
So first of all, thank you for sharing the story, and I'm sorry to hear about that with your father. That's a sad testament to some of the challenges that we have in medicine, and specifically in cardiovascular services, is, you know, detecting and earlier detection, as you're clearly focused on. If I may, before we launch into that, I just want to be sure that I'm correct in my understanding. When you say flash memory, you're talking about essentially all of the hard drives that we now use are essentially flash memory. That's the technology that you're referencing, that you were part of the development?
Yes, very much so. I was the designer of the very first flash memory device. And, you know, interestingly, innovation is always met with some resistance, right? And there was some skepticism inside of Intel if this, the new device has a market, believe it or not. And today, no digital camera, no cell phone, as you pointed out, solid state drives, etc. You know, in a way, flash has impacted many aspects of our lives. And yet, at that time, you know, there was a great actually hesitation inside: is this a product, or is this just a couple of PhDs pet project?
Well, I'm just delighted to hear that story. I'm not that surprised. I mean, as you think about lots of technologies, you think about Kodak and the image processing, and how they sort of, no, nobody would ever want this. So not surprising, but I'm just eternally grateful, because every year I buy bigger and bigger drives that are clearly, you know, contributed to by your insights and patents. So thank you for that. Back to HeartBeam and, you know, some of the technology. So you've clearly got a insight into the challenge that we have. And you talked a little bit about this, the difficulty. And I come at this as an emergency room physician. It was always rule out. And, you know, we talk about rule out from heart attack as rule out myocardial infarction. The number of chest pains that you reference, and I couldn't have quoted that number, but as I think back, probably not surprising, 85%. And you're right, time is muscle. The sooner you do that, we've got delays and so forth. You're essentially have created a solution that starts to focus in on that problem, and that's the HeartBeam device. Tell us a little bit about the process that you went through to get to that, if you would.
Absolutely. It you know, when I started the company and I told some physicians and some colleagues of mine in the technology field, medtech field, about my vision of having a credit card size device, as thin as a couple of stacked credit cards, in my wallet at all times, and being able to get a standard of care type of signal, 12-lead ECG, I was met with great skepticism. And of course, it hasn't been easy to actually overcome all the barriers that we faced. But interestingly enough, I paired with two nuclear physicists. So you have a team of a chip designer and two nuclear physicists looking at this problem that was deemed to be untractable. Basically, you can't have a planar device, small device like that, replace all these viruses running around the body, right? And we basically said, well, heart is an antenna, basically. To simplify things, we said heart is an antenna, like an FM station antenna. It's source of electromagnetic waves, and we will model it in that manner. Once we have done that, then we came up with a way to measure three components in 3D of that heart's electrical activity. In other words, heart is a three-dimensional organ, and the electrical currents move in the 3D space. So once you measure the components of that movement in the 3D space, electrical movement in the 3D space, then you have the complete information about that cardiac cycle or that person's heart activity. And that was not known 100 years ago when 12-lead ECG was invented. And amazingly enough, to this day, this is one of those rare technologies that really did not see any significant improvement. That ECG 70 years ago and today, you know, and how it is actually diagnosed by physicians did not change very much. Piece of paper, they look at it, they are highly trained to recognize the changes, but it still is about 100-year-old technology. So we took this new look at this, and I credit that sort of no baggage that we had with our inventions. By now we have 3 issued patents, 10 pending patents that all deal with how do you do that. So all in all, right now we have a technology that has this credit card size device that you press against your chest for 30 seconds, and the signals go up to the cloud. A lot of processing, 3D signal processing happens in the cloud. Next thing, we supply all that information to the physician, including the 12-lead ECG that they are trained to interpret our diagnostic suggestion. And at that point, they can engage with their patient, and the loop is closed. Patient did not feel well. We collected all the relevant information. We shared all the signals and information with the physician. And the physician is in a great shape to advise that patient, call 911, or likely a indigestion or pull muscle. Maybe do a recording a couple hours later again, just to verify, but stay at home.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist. Today I'm talking to Branislav Vajdic. He is the CEO and founder of HeartBeam. We were just talking about the history of the ECG. And I can tell you as a medical student, you know, one of the areas that I certainly struggled with, and one of the insights that you sort of intimated, and I think it's important for people to understand when you think about this 12-lead ECG, is it's essentially a visual of electrical activity from different locations in the body. It's like looking, that was the most helpful insight that I ever received from a cardiologist was, you're looking at the heart through this little telescope and just seeing the electrical activity that way. And that helped me understand. But, you know, you make an important point, and, you know, I guess maybe a little bit surprising to folks is how old this technology. Sure, we've added some new capabilities. We can do it faster. It used to be, a much more involved process. We can do it much faster. But here you're doing it in an entirely different way. And I think I want to call out something that you highlighted that I see as an incremental step in this, which was the no baggage comment. It's, you know, you didn't have the history of, well, that's the way it's done. You looked at it in an entirely different way. And it sounds like the adjacent possible from the nuclear physicists that you talked about, that maybe they were seeing it in a different way, that they were accessing different imaging, albeit not ECGs. Was that the way that you came up with this concept?
Yes, absolutely. You know, without a novel approach, this problem was not going to be solved, right? Because there is no way to get that 12-lead ECG without all these wires running around the body. And turned out that our 3D model is superior to that 12-lead ECG, the standard of care. We've done a number of studies. We have shown that our 3D signal collection and subsequent processing give more accurate data in regards to that possible heart attack that than a panel cardiologist reading that 12-lead ECG standard of care. Very significant. And another thing that we have innovated in on top of this three-dimensional signal collection and processing is a personalized marker. We came up with a way to actually detect heart attack by differentiation between your current state and your normal state. Very important. Every normal is a bit different. Mm. And in our case, it's personalized. So when you become a subscriber, we build your model that's just your model. And then when you don't feel well, we actually go and subtract your normal from your current and see the difference. Very important. So those two things were crucial in making this technology possible. And again, you know, there is no other technology that we are aware of that's capable of doing that with a device that's always with the patient 24/7 effortlessly.
Fantastic. So, you know, clearly some tremendous advances with different thinking that provided a way of looking at the electrical conduction and importantly, focused on some specific problems that we have with cardiovascular disease and the challenge and, you know, obviously a very personal story from your perspective. Tell us a little bit about the problem that you're solving, because it's extensive, but maybe not widely appreciated.
Yes, the problem, the first problem, the, perhaps the most important one that we are solving and we believe we have solved is that dilemma that that chest pain patient is facing. And again, time is muscle. And in many cases, it does not end well because intervention, timely intervention and a late intervention make a huge, huge difference. So in the value that we offer to the patient is an easy, always with the patient way to reassure them that they are fine, or if they are not, timely intervention that in many cases just around the corner in terms of being able to call 911, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the people ask me sometimes, what is the standard of care right now? Well, I'm afraid the standard of care right now is patient is on their own, really, because they have to triage themselves. They have to decide, is that one too many taco that I ate, or is this really a heart attack? And they are not qualified to do that. And so if you lower that barrier as we did to taking this device out of the pocket and having your physician perhaps in a televisit a few minutes later, then the value to the patient is very, very clear. But I'd like to point out that in our investigations or in talks with the other stakeholders, like providers and insurance companies, payers, we find huge resonance, right? You know, if you talk to the payers, they're keenly interested in having a more continuous look at that high-risk patient, because all of a sudden, instead of once a year, you're doing your checkup once a week. It's a 30-second investment. And it's a normal, it does not really go to your physician unless it's found to be abnormal. So the data is being built, we apply AI to that data, that data-rich data set, And all of a sudden, and we strongly believe that's going to happen, you have preventive value and predictive value, not only that you have a reactive value for that patient that's symptomatic, but collecting that longitudinal lifelong data will yield, in our opinion, huge possibility of preventing and predicting some of these events.
So, it's interesting you talk about that differential. I mean, that's, and, you know, you said most people are not qualified. Let me be clear. I have the same problem and I'm a physician. When I have chest pain, I'm worrying about it. And, the value of applying data to this, I think, is extraordinary. I think some folks might look at this and say, well, okay, so this is an ECG. How is this not just, we've got devices that do this. Is this different?
Yes, this is very different, right? There are a whole bunch of variables, Apple Watch being most familiar one with that has ECG technology. Well, ECG technology that Apple and others have done well for AFib, for rhythm detection, and that's very relatively narrow diagnosis, an important one, but relatively narrow diagnosis. And they are specifically in their FDA clearance stating they are not able to detect heart attack. So the differentiation is huge between a 12 lead capable, and in our case, even beyond that, going beyond that, and a single lead ECG that's capable of detecting only a arrhythmia, of course, our technology offers that value as well. So our vision is sort of a one-stop shopping, if you want, for all cardiac patients and worried well population that is interested in monitoring their cardiac health.
So clearly different, some automation that allows you to get to some rapid review of content without the requirement to include individuals. This device being, you're going through the process to get FDA approval, you're doing some trials and so forth. Tell us a little bit about where you see this going.
Well, it in our mind, this is going to be in cardiovascular space for patients and for worried wells alike, a technology that will be widely accepted because it's so easy to use. It's effortlessly with the user, in this case, patient or non-patient. And again, cardiovascular disease, number one cause of death worldwide. Finally, you can do something to monitor your cardiac health, and God forbid, if you don't feel well, to react in time.
So I think an exciting time. You're essentially focused on a specific set of needs and a problem that exists in cardiovascular patients, extending beyond that, distribution of these devices that would be in the home. But in the future, I mean, it sounds like this might be something that everybody has and is always available, so that you can answer that question quickly and easily. And it's tied to both the technology that gives you that three-dimensional imaging, plus all of the automation and the preview. I think it's important to have the normal or the individualized ECG that says, this is Nick's ECG, or this is Branislav's ECG.
Absolutely. Again, this is part of one of the key innovations that we came up with. And, the markets are huge, right? There are about 20 million people with diagnosed coronary artery disease, very high risk for heart attack. And the worldwide market is, of course, even much bigger. And so we are very excited about the impact. Talking about flash memory again, it had huge impact on our lives. And I'm equally excited today with the prospect of this technology changing, touching so many lives, and removing fear and prolonging life with timely intervention.
Fantastic. Well, unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show. Exciting times. I think maybe there's another patent that's going to be long-lived and people will be saying the same thing in years to come. Wow, Branislav had this additional patent all around cardiovascular disease. So thanks for joining me, Branislav.
Thank you so much. It was very much enjoyable conversation today.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.